And we are back. We are here at Next Tech 2017 in the beautiful city of Nairobi in Kenya. It is really nice here, man.
It is.
I love it here. I have a special guest. Tell us who you are and what you do, my friend.
My name is Hoop Somwa, and I am the technical advisor to the CEO.
Fantastic. That sounds like a fun job.
It's the most amazing job I've ever had.
So how did you get involved in Next Tech? Tell us a little bit about sort of your involvement with Africa and then sort of this event.
Well, I grew up in Africa. Mm-hmm. I'm originally from Ghana. My parents grew up there. I was actually born in the States, but we moved back to Ghana when I was about 10 years old.
Awesome.
I went to high school there and then came back to the States for college. And I've worked at Microsoft for 13 years now, all over the company, most recently in the CEO office, but I've worked on Xbox, Windows, worked in on the WCF Communication Foundation.
Nice.
Back in the day, that was actually my first job at Microsoft.
That stuff was complicated, man. I still don't understand it, let's be honest.
I am guilty of inflicting service util upon the world.
Thank you. And not thank you at the same time.
Yes. But I love doing that, and I've always been an active member of the Africans at Microsoft employee group. And a couple of guys approached me and said, hey, we think that we need to do this conference in Africa. As you heard in the keynote, this stems from the Africa Business Forum that we started doing a couple years ago. And I got involved with helping them evangelize the idea of doing something like this in Africa again, something a little bit bigger. And here we are. It's much bigger than I thought it would turn out to be. I love the attendance and the excitement here. It's amazing.
So let's start talking about the Microsoft, Africans at Microsoft. What is that? And then we'll get into sort of the business forum that you talked about, and we'll talk about how that sort of evolved into what's happening today. So let's start with the Africans at Microsoft.
Certainly. So the Africans at Microsoft is an employee group. It's basically the Africans, people of African descent who work at Microsoft. It's not limited to people of African descent, but it's basically a group that advocates both internally for our own interests and needs, but also we're all passionate about Africa and technology in Africa. Mm-hmm. And so when we see opportunities to push that at the Microsoft level, we do that. And so this conference was actually the work of a bunch of people in Africans at Microsoft dedicating their own time to saying, hey, let's go and push this idea at Microsoft. And a lot of people within the company were really receptive to it, and here we are.
And this is something that's being done in spare time. It's not like at work you're doing this. It's a spare time thing, sort of a labor of love kind of thing.
Yeah, indeed. It started out like that, and it grew to a point where Microsoft got more involved with the conference, and now we have, like, I think we have 80-ish Microsoft people here. Yeah, but I think it started for a period of about 2 months. I was meeting with Duni and Timmy from time to time, and it was just a handful of people who said, we really want to see this happen. And then all of a sudden, it became this really amazing project that they were working on.
So let's talk about the business forum. What is that, and did that start as part of something the Africans at Microsoft did?
So the business forum actually predates my involvement with this event, but I sort of followed it from the side when Bambo and a bunch of the other Africans who started it said that they wanted to start learning more about Africa. Mm-hmm. Demystify Africa, I think, was what the first business forum was, the theme of the first business forum was. And that was held, as Bama mentioned, in Redmond, and we brought people over and had a conversation there. And over time, between the business forum and Winsiders for Good, it's become very clear that we want to learn more about the African continent. We don't just want to come here with our solutions, we want to help build, I think the word that Duni is starting to use to describe this is innately African solutions.
Oh, that's cool. So what does that mean? I mean, I'm not African. Well, if I go far back enough, we're all African. Let's be honest with each other. But what does that mean?
Innately
for someone,
African.
Yeah.
To me, I visited, I'm from Ghana, like I said, and I went back to Ghana last January, and I had all of these interesting experiences where I would launch an app that I was used to launching, and I happened to not have network connectivity, and I didn't know that this app required me to be online.
Yeah.
And sometimes even to access things that you thought would be available when you were not connected. And the landscape of networking in Africa is different. There's more people with cell phones than you'd expect compared to people with landlines, because why send landlines to places now that we have cell phone technology?
Right.
And so it's really interesting to see how technology coming into Africa at this point in time is building a very different scene and a different way of people accessing and using things. And another interesting difference is in America, you'd expect a lot of people to have their own laptops. Here, people use shared devices more frequently than that. I took a picture in my hotel of this kiosk that you can walk up to, and you see a kiosk in the US for ATM or something like that, and that's a single purpose. This was the device where someone could walk up to it and pay their electricity bill, pay their cell phone bill, and do a bunch of other things. And it's a really interesting way to unlock access to technology to a lot of people.
Right.
And so when I think about the different ways people use technology here, it becomes clear to us that we really need to come here and understand what it looks like to build our applications for the African continent. One interesting story that I always tell is people pay per, at least when I went to Ghana, I was paying per megabyte for my internet. So suddenly I cared a whole lot more about how long it took to update any of my applications. And I was actually consistently going and looking at how much bandwidth various applications were using. And I would shut down anyone that was using more than I wanted it to. And it's interesting. It reminded me of some of the ways that I've developed stuff in the cloud, where there you care about the cost of the network bandwidth as well. And so when I think about that, I think that there's an opportunity for us to think more about the current state of technology, the infrastructure that's in place, because we can still build amazing solutions. We just have to think about them in terms of the local need.
And the interesting thing is that, I mean, if you think about it, you're coming to Africa without the baggage of 20 years of old technology.
That's
and
true.
You can literally start with the best right now.
That is absolutely true.
And I love the idea of not having it, because no one had a cell phone 20 years ago. I mean, they weren't, and now everyone has them here, which is the next and greatest thing.
Yeah.
And thinking about sort of bandwidth and all this stuff, it's like we are sort of don't have to have that baggage from the 20
absolutely.
Years. So tell us a little bit about sort of Nextech. How did that come about?
Well, for my perspective of Nextech was I met this guy, Duni, one of the organizers. I don't know if you met him.
But yeah, he actually works on Channel 9 as one of our developers now.
Yes, this is true, yes.
Really awesome guy. He'll be here at the end of the day.
Nice. So I met Duni, and he told me about how he was a little frustrated that the African Business Forum, he wasn't sure whether it was going to happen or not. And I said, well, do something. Get involved. And he was already well on his way, you know, Duni.
Sure.
Well on his way to trying to make things happen. And I sort of kept encouraging him and the other folks suggesting people we should talk to. And we had a couple of meetings about what it would look like to have a true conference. Back then, we weren't even calling it Nextech. But at some point, it became clear that we were starting a whole new conversation. This is a new conversation in Africa with the African continent. And
sure.
So it needed a new name. And the Africa Business Forum didn't, like, it's a great name, but it doesn't really speak to what the conference is about.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the opportunities for tech in the continent of Africa.
Sure.
Tell us, like, for people that are watching and are thinking, boy, I want to invest in Africa. I want to put technology. What are some things that people should think about?
Well, what kind of people?
Any people. Technologists.
There's
two. Like, there's people in Africa and people maybe outside of Africa.
True, indeed. I think for people outside of Africa, one of the things that I would suggest is learn more.
Yeah.
Visit if you can. If you can't, just go online and learn. Africa's not the typical place that you see on TV if you just watch conventional media. There's a lot of technology that's already growing here.
There's a Silicon Valley, and then there's like a savannah tech thing as well.
Yep, here in there's stuff going on here. If you go to Nigeria, there's a lot of tech stuff going on. In Ghana, I've met with a couple of tech companies when I was there. There's a lot of amazing people. You heard about M-Kopa during the
of
keynote.
Course.
There's the M-Pesa stuff going on. And a lot of these things are things that are not even happening like in the US.
Right.
There's nothing like M-Kopa that I know of happening in America. I'm sure there's probably companies that do that at a larger scale, but these are some interesting things that people might not know about that are opportunities. Invest in one of those companies because they're all already doing amazing stuff.
Sure.
And if you can visit and come and learn about interesting ideas here, that's another opportunity as well. I'm really excited about the fellowships that we're doing with Windows Insiders for Good, because that's going to be an opportunity for us to learn about some of these great, amazing initiatives that are already happening. And it's astounding to hear about how many crazy things that people are already trying. They're just completely different from what you'd think about if you were just sitting on the other side of the Atlantic.
Absolutely. So what if you are in Africa? What are some opportunities that you have? Let's just say someone's an aspiring technologists and they want to invest in Africa. What are some things that they can do now to invest?
Well, coming from my perspective as a hardcore engineer,
yeah.
I'm very passionate about the and excited about the potential for things like artificial intelligence,
right.
the growth of the cloud. And I think it's really important for us to look at these emerging technologies and think really hard about what it means for them to be innately African.
Mm-hmm.
Like when it comes to things like speech recognition, I'm really interested in seeing what is it going to look like when we can understand all the various languages that are spoken across the African continent and the huge diversity of dialects that there are
here. Sure.
That's something that you might not see in other parts of the world. And I think we're going to need to rely on local technologists who are going to embrace these challenges and take them head on. And there's a lot of them.
How is the cloud changing technology for people in Africa and in the world?
I think the first thing that excites me about the cloud for people across the world is it democratizes access to compute technologies and storage and various things that are that require a lot of investment, upfront capital. And today, if you go use something like Azure Functions, you're not worrying about even the small cost of starting up your own VM goes away.
Yeah.
You write some logic and you pay when people use that logic. Mm-hmm. And then you can scale much more economically. I think we're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing happening in the cloud. And I think that's going to give opportunities for people who previously did not have some of the upfront resources that you need to be part of the cloud to get in. And I think that's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see when the solutions that are built around that model start to come out.
The first time I realized the opportunity in emerging markets, I was in Peru interviewing someone and they said, listen, Seth, before the cloud, if I wanted to actually build something like the next startup, I would have to order a box.
Mm-hmm.
It would come on a boat.
Yep.
It would stay at the place. I would have to pay the guy.
Yep.
Then I would have to take it to my building and then I would have to cool it. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months after my idea, I'd barely start to have my server. He said, now with a couple of clicks, I can literally build my business.
Yes, and it's a better business.
Yeah.
Like that server that you're talking about is sitting probably under a desk somewhere.
Yep.
Maybe if you're lucky, it's sitting in a rack.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably don't have that data that you're storing on it stored redundantly in three different locations. If your network goes down, you don't have the ability to pivot to a different place to connect to. And so the cloud goes beyond just giving you a virtual version of your computer. They're actually unlocking a lot of new capabilities. I mean, I spent a little bit of time just speculating on Microsoft putting FPGAs in our data centers.
Well,
and
yeah.
What does that mean for Africa? And I would love to hear from actual African technologists about what they think that that's going to mean for them. Because I
Absolutely.
Think that it's going to be interesting what we put in our cloud data centers, how other people use them is going to be some of the most amazing innovations that I think we're going to see.
As a TA, you have a unique opportunity to look forward to what is happening in technology landscape. How do you see the technology landscape changing for people that are in Africa? What are some things that are going to be super awesome for people here?
In Africa, I think I'm really excited to see true equitable access to the cloud. Like everybody being able to access the cloud, but more importantly, something that I've been playing a lot with in my own personal time is Microsoft has something called Power Apps now and
of
Microsoft
course.
Flow. And the Microsoft Flow lets me get up and write little logic that's going to run in the cloud for my own personal use. And I think someday we're going to see a lot of people, like just average people, just writing a little bit of logic in the cloud and having that help them with whatever business they're doing.
And when you say that, the fun thing is that we literally, I was with Scott Guthrie filming something and I'm like, hey, what do you want me to cover? He's like, oh, Azure. I'm like, of course, but is there something that's super interesting? He said, why don't you look at Flow? And we went and talked to the principal PM on Flow,
yeah.
And we went through it, and it was just like astounding how easy it was to do this. And he said, we're trying to make it so that people that want to do some kind of automated thing,
mm-hmm.
they all can do it. And so
yeah.
Flow is a really interesting thing. For those that don't know about it, how would you describe it?
Wow, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with If This Then That,
yeah.
I would say Flow is like a professional version of that. A lot of people aren't. The way I think of Flow for myself is, it's my own personal automated programming environment for my own life.
Right.
I can go and write code in Azure for days to automate business processes for centralized organizations or for some startup that I'm doing. But for my own personal things, I have a flow that runs every time I get an email from Satya
right.
that will like push a notification. Go check your phone in case you haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
You have an email from Satya. Or I have flows that run over like SharePoint folders and tell me when people upload certain documents, and then they can like push a notification to me. I think that the ability to compose flows as part of the way I do my own personal work is the most exciting thing to me in the cloud. It's like I have my own personal cloud.
And what's interesting is that every time, like us technologists, we'll go to great lengths to not go to great lengths, you know, because we'll solve all sorts of problems, right?
Yeah.
And it feels like flow fills those little tiny gaps where we're like, hey, you know what, I want to automate this little part. Yeah. And it's like the glue that fills those gaps.
Yeah, it's like there were times in the past where I'd want to go write a PowerShell function to do something for me. I'd want to go write some other code in the cloud. Flow makes it easier to do. I can get things done much more quickly. But I think it also makes that sort of capability more accessible. Because not everyone's a coder, but a lot of people should be able to benefit from the cloud.
Absolutely.
And Flow's workflow, they give you a UI that lets you build these things.
It's really nice.
That's pretty nice.
I'm just saying, it's really nice.
If you haven't checked out Flow, you should.
And I think Caitlin, the person that's producing it, she was with me during the video, and it made perfect sense. Right? She's giving me like a thumbs up. I mean, it's and she's not a programmer, but she could write these herself. And she's like, wow, that was actually kind of easy. And she was interested. Yeah. Usually she's not interested in the stuff I'm doing.
I also really like the way Flow connects to your like all kinds of existing sources of information.
Absolutely.
It's really easy to connect it to my email. I actually wanted a way to know whenever my work, like my late meetings at work, conflicted with some personal family engagement. So I wrote a flow where anytime something was created on my personal family calendar, it would copy it over to my business calendar automatically.
I
and it would add
that.
Family before it, so I knew that it was a family related engagement, but it would just get copied over just so that I had that time blocked off and I would be able to see that.
That's interesting, because I recently purchased for me and my wife, because you know our job is crazy and I want to make sure that I have the right amount of time for my family.
Yeah.
I bought my own Office 365 subscription that has flows in there, and now I'm like, oh wow, that's a really good idea. Anytime I have a flight that gets put into my calendar, just move it over, my wife will know.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what technologies are you interested in specifically when it comes to AI that you think are going to be tons of benefit for people?
I'm blown away by the growth of neural networks.
Yeah.
It's amazing seeing its applications across the board, seeing our research teams use it in a lot of things, and I'm really excited to see people start ramping up on that as individuals. It's amazing. These days, like with a little bit of training, you take a cell phone camera and it's recognizing objects and images that you're looking at, and that's an example of an area that I think will have some very interesting local applications that I'm not even going to be able to think about.
Awesome.
So neural networks would be probably at the top of my list, and Microsoft has CNTK, which is our neural network platform.
Absolutely.
And I'm really excited. I don't know a whole lot about it because neural networks is so different from regular programming.
It is.
So last week I put CNTK on my laptop, and hopefully on the flight back home I'm going to dig into that.
And you know what? The thing that's cool is my personal passions, I studied machine learning and AI, and seeing people get excited, because I was excited about it like 5 years before people were excited about it, and so now everybody that's nerdy is like in my camp, we should do this stuff. I love the idea of neural networks, but some people may find that a little too intimidating. We also have cognitive services
that
helps with that. Why don't you describe those?
Like cognitive services gives people an ability to take advantage of the neural networks we've already built that we have running in the cloud, and you can sort of train things. So an example is if I want to do image recognize faces in a photo, I can train neural network using our cognitive services, and then I can just upload a picture and it tells me who's in the photo.
It's pretty amazing.
It's magical.
They can also tell you how old they are.
They can tell you how they're feeling.
Angry.
Yeah, emotions. The Lewis service, its ability to like parse text and help you actually extract intent from text. I think that kind of stuff is really fascinating.
And I feel like you know how whenever we want to write some software, there's no way we're going to write all of it. We get some good libraries, and we're like, it's going to work because we pay them. That's what the AI cognitive services are. It's like the system calls of AI, and trust me, we've made them work. They work. Yeah. And so that's the cool thing that I like about that.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about the future of technology from your perspective.
Wow.
I know, I'm putting it on the spot. This is something you live day in and day out.
Yes, future of technology from my perspective, that's a tough question. I think that I'm really excited about the growth of the cloud.
Yeah.
It's both exciting and scary, kind of like AI in some sense. There's a lot of excitement around it and a little bit of apprehension around it. Mm-hmm. But to me, that means that technology is growing in terms of its maturity and in terms of the accessibility to the various kinds of technology that we're going to build. I'm very excited at seeing what we're going to look back on 5 years from now, in particular what the cloud is going to look like. I think things are going to look very, very differently than the way they look today. I mean, the cloud already has changed so much since it started. It used to be about VMs, and then people talked about PaaS and SaaS, and people are talking about containers and serverless programming today. I think that we're going to see some very interesting changes over the next couple of years in that space. And I'm also really excited to see how people end up using AI in its various forms, both on client clients and servers, I think that we'll see some very fascinating, mind-boggling things happening there.
I love the insight that you mentioned with the cloud, that we started out sort of big and we're sort of going tiny down to way to down to like a, essentially a function that you can do. And that's it's really exciting to do that.
Yeah, that's something that I've been passionate about for years now. So I'm really excited to see that that sort of stuff take shape.
Awesome. So where can people go to find out more about these things that you've been talking about? Do you have a blog? Is there some way that you put out messaging so people, I mean, because people are interested in what you have to
that
say.
That's an interesting question. I have a blog, but I don't think I've blogged in a very long time. The last blog I made was about the Orleans technology we use Halo. I think that's the last time I posted to my blog. My Twitter account is relatively active. Now it's active because I'm talking about Nextech a lot. But there's a wealth of information out there. Since taking the CEO tech advisor role, I don't blog and talk about technology as much, but I still stay online. Scott Hanselman's blog is something that I read pretty consistently. I think one of the places that I've been going to, and I didn't really notice this myself, but I started going a lot to the stuff that we have on LinkedIn Learning and using that. And there's a lot of amazing online resources for learning about things like that these days.
That's awesome. So just to finish up, what was the coolest thing you've worked on in your career at Microsoft that you're like, wow, this is the nerdiest thing I've ever worked on?
Wow. It would definitely have to be the back end for Halo.
For
Halo. Yeah, it was my first time to work with Azure, and we started out, Halo was running in its own data centers, and we took on the challenge of saying, we need this thing to move to the Azure cloud. And we started thinking about what that meant, what that looked like, and we picked up on this term called cloud native, the idea of building things with the specific intent of targeting the cloud, and that has to be the most exciting period of rapid learning and reforming what it meant in my mind to build applications. And I think I'm going to have to do that again, so I'm pretty excited about it.
The thing about it is, like, if you solve a problem with distributed systems, then you start to have two problems, right?
Yes.
Because it's a difficult, difficult thing to even know if computers are up or whatever.
Yep.
And a lot of that, those learnings have gone into Azure Service Fabric, for example.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool, using the actor model and such.
Yep. The virtual actor model is one of the most interesting things that I got to play with in my time in Halo. The idea that you can build this agnostic layer on top of all the cloud services that you're using, on top of all the cloud resources, and then use that abstraction layer to simplify the programming for individual developers is fascinating. Like you said, distributed systems get so complicated,
so hard.
And every time you add just a little bit more logic to your thing, it gets exponentially more complicated.
Because, I mean, every time you add a new node, that node has to know about all the other ones, and so when you say exponential, he literally means exponential.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. Sorry, you go ahead. You were going to say.
No, I was going to say, like, interesting things like suddenly latency is actually a really, really big problem. In fact, I would rather have my service be down than have high latency.
Right. Because then you know what's
going
on.
Well, then you know, but one of the interesting things that we saw, and I think like Netflix actually has a blog post talking about this somewhere. If one service has high latency and other people are calling it, then they have high latency as well because they're sitting there waiting on this service to respond, and there's this sort of cascading effect of high latency that eventually leads your entire system to just fall over, and you might actually be better off shutting down that individual system. And there's a pattern called the circuit breaker pattern that people use in programming to sort of enable this.
Yeah, I mean, you literally, because then you don't know which one's broken. You might as well just be like, look, if you're broken, you're broken. Say you're broken.
If something takes, like, and I mean, you see this with individuals. If you start loading a website and it takes more than 30 seconds to load, you'll just
assume
yeah, you'll hit refresh a couple times. And after that, if it doesn't load, you just assume the website's down. And I think that that's the way we should be building applications as well.
Absolutely.
You walk away if it doesn't respond.
So final words, call to action. What do you have to say?
I think everyone should get more involved with Africa. Everyone should check out Nextech because it's an amazing event. And even if you're not here at Nextech, you can still be involved by following us online.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us, Hoop. We have been learning all about the future and what's going to happen in technology here in Africa. We hope. Make sure you get involved. Thanks for watching. We'll be right back.